Hi, Ida. Thank you so much for coming on today.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to be here.
Right. So I want to get an idea of what your role was in the production of this episode and in the series in general.
Yeah, so I started on Life on Our Planet, or Loop as we shorthandedly call it, in 2018. So that's 5 years ago now, which feels kind of mad. And at the time I was a researcher. And when I started, I was sort of broadly across all the episodes, sort of part of the initial figuring out exactly what it was going to be and how it was going to work, which was really, really fun to be a part of. And then eventually I was put onto two episodes of the series as a researcher, which was episode 3, which is about life coming up on land, and episode 7, which is the rise of the mammals.
Okay, so what I'd like to discuss is the research that goes on behind it, because we're looking at, you know, the fossil record, which is very incomplete. You for instance, just have a load of bones. It's very hard to understand how, for instance, you would get those bones and turn them into an animal that walks. But when you're making a documentary, you have to show, you know, like a living animal as the result, as what is on screen. So you have to be able to, in some way, decide, you know, like how it walked, how fast it walked, how it breathed, how it behaved. You've got all of these things that you have to show that you might not have any evidence for. So when you were doing your research, how often did you find yourself in kind of like scientific dead ends? Like, you want to find something out, but then you find out that nobody's ever researched it before.
Yeah, it could be really tricky at times, particularly in the life coming up on land episode, because the fossil record for that isn't as clear as the mammal's fossil record, obviously. And so, you know, one of the creatures that we had was our fisher pod, which comes out onto land. And finding the species that we were going to do for that was incredibly tricky. And we were just really lucky that there's a lot of fantastic scientists out there who were amazing at giving us sort of creative control and allowing us to be creative with what that was going to come out and look like. And so obviously we worked with the science and we worked with trying to follow it as closely as we could to the fossil record. But sometimes it was a bit of a guesswork, and it was kind of working between the lines of creativity and science and trying to bring those animals to life in a way that is going to be fun and entertaining for the audience, but also as accurate as possible. So yeah, it was definitely a balancing act between the two. And there is a lot that isn't known, which is quite fun in a way, because it means that you can use our knowledge as people who work with animals all the time. You know, we make natural history documentaries, we watch animals in the wild all of the time. And so being able to use that knowledge and understanding of wildlife and bringing it to life in sort of prehistoric creatures that aren't around anymore was really fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I really found it difficult, as, you know, like coming into this as a scientist, as a scientific consultant, to work with what is known and what isn't known. But then, like, you can't sit on the fence with this kind of thing. You have to come down on one side of the fence one way or another. And whatever you choose, you are probably going to get criticism for it in one way or another. Say, for instance, you wanted to show T-Rex with or without feathers. Like, obviously there's evidence for and against, but you have to show one of them. There's no hedging your bets. You're all in.
Yeah. It's really, really tough. And, you know, not all of us on the team were even always in agreement with how it should be. And there would be a lot of back and forth between us and the animators, the producers, and, you know, our advisors in how to make that as correct as possible. And we always knew that there were going to be details that you know, the paleontological community we're going to pick up on. You guys are very, you know, you scrutinize a lot. I've seen the responses to other shows that have been on. And I know that we are very, very closely looked at. And so that is always a bit of a worry, just trying to make sure that we're doing justice to everything. And mm-hmm. I think I'm quite aware of how important these kind of shows are to people who study paleontology. You know, it's an opportunity to see these animals that you look at in the fossil record and in bones and things, and see them come to life. And so, yeah, it's really important to try and please as many people as possible. I think one of our rules, though, was we always had to think that we are making this for 99% of the population and not 1%. Yeah. And 99% of the population don't know that this specific shape of the jaw, you know, was an important factor. And so, yeah, there were times where you had to sort of step back from the scientific research and just kind of work out how it was going to creatively work better as well.
So given that you are reading so much into the background, into the science, and I've seen this when I've been there in Silverback, just how much work you do reading papers and whatnot. And then also when you're working on natural history, you're out there in nature, you're out there making direct observations of behavior and ecology and all that kind of stuff. So I want to know, is there much of a crossover between the research you do as for a documentary and the research that people do for science? They're incredibly closely aligned.
Yeah, it can be really interesting. I mean, obviously, it's quite rare that you're finding something new when you're out filming, because we're there for quite limited periods of time and we're not normally specifically looking for something new. We're usually looking for a behavior that has been seen and observed before. But one of my absolute favorite things about working with scientists is being able to show them our rushes and for them to look back at it and see these animals in ways that they don't get to see in their own research. We've got cameras that are super sensitive. We've got macro lenses that can get in really close. We can do high speed footage that just slows things down to an extent that they never see. And so, yeah, I just absolutely love having those opportunities to sit down with scientists and play back some of the stuff that we filmed, and for them to, you know, sometimes see something new. So, yeah, it was quite exciting. One of the shoots that I did for Life on Our Planet, we were filming strawberry dart frogs. And one of the behaviors that we filmed on camera was when the females come down to the bromeliad, and there's a tadpole, and they deposit an egg into the bromeliad for the tadpole to eat. And, you know, they come back every 6 days for months on end, coming back to feed these tadpoles. And one of the things that the tadpole does is when the mother sort of plonks herself down, is it does this begging behavior where it swims around her and nudges her and taps her. And we were filming this really, you know, in real detail, close up. We had a high speed camera so that we could slow the action down, because it's incredibly fast what happens. And we got some really nice footage, and I was playing back to the scientist, and she just got so excited. And she said, I can see the tadpole chewing on the female's leg. She said, I've not seen that in that sort of detail before. And actually it's making me think that something different is going on. And we were then able to pull out other footage, freeze frame some of our shots, and you could really, really clearly see this tadpole chewing on the mother's skin. And so, you know, she theorized that is helping to supplement the egg feeding, is that they're actually taking secretions off the skin and potentially feeding some of their poison into the tadpole as well, because they find traces of poison in the tadpole. And actually she was able, this is Jenny Stojnowski from Costa Rica University. She was able to publish a paper on it, which was incredibly exciting.
Wow.
To be a part of. Yeah.
that's fantastic. You know, like, to be able to contribute back to science and progress science just because of you being there filming this kind of stuff. That's absolutely amazing.
it's really exciting. It's so nice to just to be able to be a part of that. You know, I don't come from a scientific background. I actually studied a drama degree, which is quite unusual for natural history researchers. So for me to be able to be a part of that academic world and see sort of like into how that is done was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. But then we've all got completely different backgrounds. I think that's the thing that a lot of people don't understand, is that to be a scientist, you don't need that pure scientific background. The very fact that you were there, that you've done the research, that you were doing the filming, and now you've been on a paper talking about frog parenting and stuff like that. Now you're an expert in strawberry dart frogs.
Yeah, you do become an expert for brief periods of time on quite a lot of different things. So it's good fun. I do enjoy sort of being able to leap from project to project and become an expert in something for a few months and then jump onto the next thing is quite fun.
So in situations like this where you have found something new, your academic consultants all super excited and wants to publish on these findings. Do you get support to be able to do that from the people who actually make the documentary?
Yeah, we do actually. You know, we quite often will make some kind of negotiation or deal with scientists where they're able to take our footage or like stills from our footage and use that for their own analysis. There are sort of layers of complexity to that because obviously the footage tends to be, you know, it's high value footage, so they don't want it to be shared beyond with the public. But say in this scenario with the dart frogs, we were able to give them 5 or 6 screen grabs, which they were then able to use within the paper and publish the images to be able to show the behavior that we'd filmed. So yeah, it's a really nice thing actually. Like there are scenarios where we are filming things that have very rarely been seen or, you know, recorded in any sort of way. And to be able to send our rushes over to scientists for them to privately look at that and analyze it and use it for their own research is a really exciting opportunity.
Well, thank you, Ida, for joining us.
You're very welcome. It was lovely to speak with you.